was all a dream. I used to read Wizard magazine, Marvel versus DC. I don't wanna fight no more, y'all. Check this out right here.
Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 463. Colin is not with us right now. He is running late, so we decided to start without him. I'm Pat, and with me today are...
Brandon.
Dave.
Spencer.
Man, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird without Colin there to kind of set things off, but oh well.
So you get through the opening a lot easier than he makes it seem. Like...
Yeah, I tried this before, though, and I screwed it up, so... I'm not going to bust his chops on that too bad, because it's more difficult than it seems.
Don't know what you got until it's gone.
That's true, yeah. No, I mean, look at the time you weren't here. It was like, we were missing a heart.
Yeah.
And then Dave came back, and it was...
I appreciate that, thank you.
Yeah. Some days you're a little down, and you don't bring the energy, but today, you brought the energy, and that's what's important. So Colin's not here right now to give us a rant, although I'm sure he has... some, because it's Colin. Well, I guess we have some questions.
We have questions? Yeah. So the first one is from Mr. Ludwig. Favorite advertisement in comic books? Hostess, Big Jim action figures, Nintendo games, etc.
Gotta love the Hostess ones.
Yeah, those are...
Twinkie the Kid.
That's
and
at the top.
The Hostess pies. Those things were awesome.
I don't know about favorite, but I can tell you the ones I hate the most. Like, I hated that Twix one from a few years ago. That was, like, the half pay.
Yes.
That was dumb.
The sea monkeys always creeped me out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I had no idea what that was about.
They're brine shrimp. Just call them what they are. Hey, kids, waste your money on some stupid brine shrimp.
The ones from, like, my youth that stand out are, like, the video game ones.
Yeah,
like, I remember
too, yeah.
Battletoads. Yeah. Game Genie, like I can pick
Metal
those.
Gear, and it had all the different supplies you could get was on there.
Yeah, like those are the ones that stand out in my mind.
Oh, it's good you mentioned both Battletoads and Game Genie, because you weren't beating Battletoads without Game Genie.
I remember the Frogger.
Yeah.
And those old, like the first Star Wars video games, there was like a lightsaber game. It was just like a lightsaber that was like the only thing on the screen.
Oh, wow. I've never seen
it
that
one. It was like a training video of Luke, you know, with the training decoy, whatever that thing's called.
Okay. Was it like Atari 2600 or something?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was either that or Intellivision or something.
Okay. Yeah, No, I don't think I had any of the Star Wars games on the Atari 2600. I did have Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I didn't either.
I had the, what was the N64 one?
There was two. There was X-Wing, and then there were Shadows of the Empire.
I think it was Shadows of the Empire, the one where you can, like, the first level is the Hoth level.
Yes, yeah, that was Shadows of the Empire. That one was a lot of fun. And you could, like, open up the doors and let the Wampas out to get the Stormtroopers. That was a good game.
Let's see. Here's another one. I'll just call him Zach. I think Colin knows his real name, but so the Warner Media Discovery merger, and then he's got a second one here that's a little directed at Colin, but I'll read it. Also, the PRH and its net 60 and free shipping versus Diamond with the same discount levels offered by PRH, but no free shipping and no net 60 pros and cons. So
that's a straight up con.
That is a Colin question.
Yeah, that's a straight up con question. I know he said before though that the free shipping does not offset the difference in his new pricing structure. Yeah.
So if he gets here in time, we'll go back to that one. But the Warner Discovery merger, as far as DC Comics is concerned, I feel like it just means status quo for another, you know, 6 to 18 months while they're getting all that stuff done legally.
I don't know, because it's clear that they're just in cost-cutting mode. So then the concern is always what comes next or what goes next. I know there's been talk before about them spinning off DC into its own and then trying to sell that off. I don't see them doing that, because then you lose all that intellectual property and everything else. Like,
one of the only things that they've done right that they could make money from.
Well... But that's the problem, is AT&T has not done well with DC, yeah. not on the comic book side and not necessarily in the movie side, but you know, you can still sell a metric shit ton of Batman toys,
yeah.
and you know, and Superman toys. So
it was my understanding that what they're doing is they're taking Discovery and like the media components
mm-hmm.
of Warner, and they're putting those together into a like co-joined company.
Yes.
So like AT&T is still separate.
They're still their parent, though.
Yeah, what it feels like is they're just like, okay, we need somebody with a clue to lead this. So they take the CEO from Discovery and hope he can run it better than, you know, whoever was running it with AT&T who screwed it all up.
What I read about it, their original idea was they want to own the media itself and own the means to deliver the media. And what they realized was it was too expensive to try to do both at the same time. So they'll split it up, but again, they still have the same parent company. That unless yeah. that parent company, you know, it may depend on the amount of oversight they have and everything else. What I see out of this is you know things like Discovery Plus will probably go away, or HBO Max. Like somehow they'll combine those because it makes no sense to run multiple things, at least for them. Like, Disney owns Hulu, but you'll see things on Hulu that you will never see on Disney Plus because it's Disney and therefore it has to stay kid friendly or reasonably kid friendly.
Because that's one of the problems that HBO Max has, right? Like Sesame Street first runs on HBO and HBO Max,
yeah,
which makes no sense because it's no one associates Sesame Street with that. Brand that's an adult brand.
Well, no. So what happened was Sesame Street was essentially going bankrupt and HBO bailed them out, but the deal was they would get, I think it's like a 6-month window where they could air the episodes, and then they'll go air PBS. On PBS. You're right.
HBO also kind of have like family, like a family channel, like you know that more. Yeah.
But if you're a parent, are you gonna like plop your 2-year-old down in front of HBO Max and you know?
You can lock a profile the same as you can anything else. I mean, hell, on Disney, there are movies you can't watch like Peter Pan and Dumbo because, you know, they were made in the 40s and things that were okay then, not that they were okay, but things that were considered okay then aren't now, so they won't appear on a child's profile, but the parent can play it for them. You did the same thing there. Okay, you can watch, you know, Sesame Street, but you're not going to be able to watch Game of Thrones.
I'm just thinking about it from a pure, like, when I say HBO... people will name 10 shows, but they won't be
Sesame Street. Yeah. No, I agree with that. But, you know, it's also not the first time they did that because the DC Universe platform collapsed and went into HBO Max. You know, not the comic book piece of it or the DC Unlimited or whatever they called it, but all the Infinite, TV show, right? Or maybe it was Infinite. It was something like that. But that stayed with its own offshoot, and all the TV shows went to HBO Max.
There's another question for Colin.
Okay.
But we can answer it.
I'll just give out bad information.
As an owner and proprietor, which were your favorite collections that came through the door? so we'll leave that one for Colin.
The ones he can make the most money off of.
Colin's not here is when we get all the...
You know,
specific questions.
I don't know that he would say that because he's had a couple that have come through that even if he hasn't made as much money, it was like nostalgia. Like, I remember having this book, and I remember having this book, and I could.
Yeah.
Colin's kind of a nostalgic, romantic type guy. You know, he'll probably dig on that more than, you know, the one that came in where he can make more money.
Yeah.
I
guess it'd be something Howard the Duck or like Frank Miller Daredevil stuff.
Yeah, the Daredevil stuff. So, I don't know.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah, whenever he gets here.
Alright.
If he gets
here. Who read anything good?
Dave, you read stuff.
I read some good stuff, yeah. Well, let's start with Heroes Reborn.
I read that.
Number 2. Which I enjoyed. I mean, I like the story and the mystery in this. This issue focuses on Hyperion.
Is Superman.
The first, yeah, he's very much Clark Kent. Like the, I don't know if it's really an A and a B, because it goes together fairly simple, but the art switches.
We get
back to McGinnis at the back end.
Yeah, it's Dale Keown.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I never knew how to pronounce
his name. Yeah, I think it's Dale Keown.
Does the first story, and then there's a backup on Ed McGinnis. Mm-hmm.
There's one, like, full-page spread that is just awesome. Which is, it's this world's version of the Fantastic Four versus Galactus, mm-hmm. is like what I felt it was meant to be. So in this issue, we see Hyperion just annihilate Galactus.
Yeah, that's a flashback at the beginning of the issue. He flies right through Galactus's. His head and destroys him.
Yeah. So that's what sticks out in my mind about the book.
Then we go back to the present, whatever reality this is, and Hyperion gets a call from Reed Richards at Shield Labs that the prison and there's been a breakout at the prison in the negative zone. So Hyperion has to go get all the super.
Yeah,
powered criminals.
So when they put Dr. Doom in, right, it gave them all a chance to escape.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has to wind them all up. And Reed Richards and Ben's there, too.
Yeah,
but
Ben's
they're
like
not powered at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Ben's like the chief of security or something.
Yeah.
So one of the villains is Mr. Beyonder, who... obviously is Mr. and Mrs. Piddalick. Mm-hmm. And there's a version of Ultron, Hank Pym. And the Hulk shows up at his alter ego, Hyperion's alter ego, Mark Milton, is a high school history teacher. And the Hulk ends up in the classroom. He was imprisoned also. Mm-hmm. And he's talking in nonsense. Whereas he seems to think something, he knows something's going on that's wrong.
And the Beyonder did too, right?
Yeah, Beyonder did too, yeah.
The villains from the negative zone, I don't, they know something is wrong.
Yes.
But they're not, like, I don't know that it's clear that, like, they are from, they're like Blade. I don't know that they're like Blade where they are from.
Right.
Another
thing.
Which makes me wonder... Is Blade, because Blade just kind of shows up. Did he escape the negative zone and just doesn't remember that? Is he one of those negative zone villains?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So,
I don't know.
But
this makes Hyperion really nervous that someone that other people know, he knows something's wrong, and other people know something's wrong, and they're going to try to take this power away from him.
Yeah.
That he, you know, that they're the. They're the heroes in this universe. And then the backup story is there's a vagrant hanging outside the classroom.
Colin's back? Oh, wait, no.
hanging out outside the classroom, listening to this altered history of World War II. And it turns out to be Captain America, who Blade rescued from the Black Ice.
It at first I thought it was Eddie Brock from the Donny Cates, because he had the same, like, you know, blonde guy with a beard look. So, but no, I'm liking the Heroes Reborn. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it too. I'm enjoying it. Next, Fantastic Four.
I heard it.
32. This is the start of the Bride of Doom storyline. which begins, there's at the museum, there's a exhibition of Latvarian,
like artifacts and art and stuff like that.
And Ben and Alicia and Johnny and Sky are there.
Yeah, and the kids.
And the kids.
Because I think, like, doesn't Alicia have some, like, sculptures there and stuff?
Yes,
so.
Yes. And then things start to go wacky because it's revealed that Elijah the Skrull is impersonating Sky. And that starts to drive a wedge between Johnny and Sky's relationship.
But it also starts, like, a fight there, too. Like, an actual physical fight between them before they figure out, you know, before she actually shows up and stuff like that. And there's, like, a, because there's a group of people that want to attack the museum.
Yeah, there's a group called Ultimatum.
Yeah.
Who want to bring, they're like monarchies. So they get involved in that fight. And then Johnny
does a Johnny thing.
Can I use this word on the podcast? Horn dog?
I think short of, there's probably only two words you can't use on a podcast.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say horn. Well, that
and horn dogs, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, too bad Mike's not here. He used both of those words.
Well, we mentioned Victorious.
Yeah, he definitely used one. I don't even use the other.
Victorious, who was from Latveria, is at the museum, too. So Johnny ends up in bed, one night stand with her.
Yeah. And Sky immediately knows because with them being so bonded, she can tell, you know, that he did the dirty, you know, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't with her.
And while they're in bed, Dr. Doom calls on the hologram machine, and Johnny hides under the bed, and that's when Doom proposes marriage.
Yeah.
To Victorious. And there's a good backup too.
Yeah.
Has a little bit of Reed Richards and Victor Von Doom in college, and Reed wants to play chess with Doom, but he doesn't think there's anybody worthy to challenge him. And then it goes back to the future with Doom, Dr. Doom and Reed. They have a sword fight.
Yeah, at the same spot in the college.
And Dr. Doom ends up.
Well, they're having a sword fight. They're also having, like, a verbal chess match, too.
Right.
Because whoever wins, the stipulation is whoever wins has to do whatever the other person says without any, you know, any questions asked. Like, you know. Yeah.
Right, that was good. And it ends up with Dr. Doom asking Reed to be his best man at the wedding. And I don't know if he accepts or not.
Well, I think he has to.
But he has to. I'm sure he will. So it was a good issue. Talk about a new one. Anybody read Time Before Time?
I read that.
Number one. Which was very interesting.
It was good. It reminds me a lot of that Looper movie. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see Looper?
I never saw it, no.
Okay. So, in Looper, the premise of that is that in the future, like, forensics is so good that the criminals can't kill people in the future. So they send them into the past where someone from the future is there waiting to kill them. And they kill them and dispose of the body in the past.
Okay.
And the plot of this book is, there is a crime syndicate where in the future is so bad that people are desperate to get away from it. And I think, what's the year? Like 20?
It's 2040.
20, is it 2040 20, or is it
2140.
Like
2140?
2140, that's right. 2140. Yeah. So the future is so bad that people get, they go back in the past, like almost like the witness protection or something.
Yeah.
To have a better life.
Yeah.
You know, so the there's a funny scene. I'm not sure if it's the opening scene or if it's the second group that they go back. So anyway, the main character,
Tatsuo,
he works for the crime syndicate, taking these people in, back into time. He drives
time pods,
and he takes this mother and her son back to the 1980s, and he's like dropping them off in a hotel, and he's like telling them, you know, okay, here's how you're set up, and the kid goes. And he goes, any questions? And the kid goes, what's the Wi-Fi password? And he goes, kid, Wi-Fi won't be invented for another decade or whatever.
So that was the first couple of pages.
This sets it up really well.
That got me hooked right there, really.
Yeah. And then it's very lighthearted at the beginning, but then it gets sad.
Yeah.
Like, because he's planning... Like, he was like planning to get away from it all.
He tells his friend Oscar that to steal a time pod together.
Yeah, well, the reason he wanted to steal the time pod was because like they wouldn't let him repay his debt. Like, he thought, oh, I'll take one back, and I'll be square with them. And then he comes back and they're like, oh, the pod from your last one, it's broken. You have to pay for that. So he's back into debt.
Right.
So he schemes with Oscar to steal one, and
before they're able to, they have to go on separate missions.
Yeah,
and Tatsuo takes a guy back to 1963 or something.
No, he goes forward, right? Oh, Tatsuo goes forward or goes back.
Yeah,
Oscar
the other
goes
guy
forward.
Goes to like the 3400s.
What do they get there? It seemed like they were getting like supplies or something from the future.
I think it was some kind of smuggling, something or other. And when Tatsuo gets back, he finds out the head of the syndicate tells him that that Oscar never came back, so they had to go rescue him. Mm-hmm. And he's an old guy now.
Yeah.
Because he's been in, they caught him for smuggling. He's been in prison for years.
Yeah, and he had to he was in prison, and then in order to get out of prison, he had to join the future army where they fight radioactive monsters or something like that. What was it? And then he's like, yeah, and I thought after that I'd be free, but nope, they just put me back into prison. So he comes back and he's been through it, and he takes a suicide pill that he got from the future where. He takes the pill, and then you go through your day, but when you fall asleep, that's it. You don't wake up.
Yeah.
So, so now he's out of it. So, what's his name again? Tatsu?
Tatsuo or Tatsu.
Yeah. He decides to escape by himself.
Yeah.
And he gets caught, and
someone comes up behind him with a gun.
Yeah, and
they get in the pod together.
Yeah, and then we learn something about this person that went in the pod when they get back into the end time.
Yeah.
We learn something about them that I won't spoil in case
let's not spoil
in case you're going to pick this up. But this book is really good.
Yeah,
so I'm definitely
Declan Shelby.
Yeah,
yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely.
Nobody read about this. Nobody read this. I'll talk about Ice Cream Man, number 24.
You know, when that first came out, I would have never thought that I'd made it to 24 issues.
I know.
Not really even knowing, much about the series, but, seems weird. It must be good.
Especially for how different it is. Every issue is a new story.
So it's like Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's an anthology, basically. Yeah, you knew.
Without the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, yeah. An Ice Cream Man instead of the Crypt Keeper. But this issue is called Telethon, and it's about this guy named Jerry whose life is going to hell, and he's dying. He lost his job, and he's sick. And the Ice Cream Man, Jerry's not aware of this, but the Ice Cream Man is hosting this telethon to save Jerry's life, the Save Jerry's Life Fund. And he wants people to donate, or readers to donate, money to save Jerry's life. And it gets really meta at the end, because near the end, because the ice cream man, he holds up a copy of the issue you're reading and says, this telethon is in this comic book you're reading. And if you readers give the money to save Jerry's life, I, the ice cream man, will pay enough money to save his life. So, I mean, if you drop the issue, if you stop reading right now, I'll pay the money to save Jerry's life. So I didn't read the rest of it. No, I read the rest, and of course, Jerry dies. And there's an obituary on the last page of Jerry, and the line at the bottom is, "This one's on you, folks." So it was really interesting. A different story that makes you think. And lastly, I'll give a real quick update on War of the Bounty Hunters.
Okay.
Just like 1 cent or 2 cents. Chewbacca gets a message from one of his Wookiee friends on Nar Shadda, the Smuggler's Moon, that Boba Fett's there. So Chewbacca, Luke, and the droids, they go there, and they get to try to find Boba Fett, who they can't find him, and they get ambushed by some other bounty hunters. And then they get a message from Leia that an unknown party has the carbonite frozen body of Han Solo. That's all that happened in that issue. And I'll stop there. That's all it.
Right. I'm going to go next, because I'm going to have to bounce here in a few.
Oh, okay.
And we may have read some of the same ones anyway. Geiger number 2.
Yep. I read that.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we learn a little bit more about the history of Geiger, which, again, I think it's ironic that his name is Geiger, but that is what it is. So he had cancer, and apparently when he got nuked, it did something to him to where instead of killing him, it powers him. It's odd. And then we spend a little bit of time in Vegas, and we find out that the king apparently tried to fight Geiger at one time, and it didn't work out too well, so he's wearing like a plastic face, because his actual face is all scarred. He has like radiation burns and everything else. But they're and I didn't quite understand this, but he has knights, and they were out in Boulder looking for the nuclear telephone, the package. And they find it somehow, which
the football.
Yeah, the football.
Yeah.
And I guess along with it was a map to where NORAD is. So for lack of a better word, the serving wench steals it, runs home, and tells her kids, we're getting out of here now. The knights bust through the door because they realize she stole it, and kill her, but her kids
escape
and steal like suits.
Well, she had set up a plan, right? She comes back and she's like, we have to go, here's what we're gonna do, we're gonna get suits, we're gonna get in the car, we're gonna go.
Yeah.
So when she dies, they run out and basically follow her plan.
Yeah. So far, this book has been better than I think it has any right to be. And I like Geoff Johns, but I mean, this...
It doesn't seem like a good premise, or like a premise that would be that good.
No, and it's really been pretty good.
Yeah, and I think the, there are a couple things in this that surprised me. Like, I didn't expect the mother to just get annihilated right away.
Yeah.
And then when their kids are driving away... they're attacked by these like giant ants, which I think was on the cover, but like I didn't see that coming, so that surprised me.
There's a couple other books that are doing the giant ant thing right now too, so it's been done, man.
But yeah, it's just like it doesn't do what you'd expect, which keeps it interesting.
Yeah. Scout's Honor number 5.
I did read that. Yeah.
This is the last issue. So Kit takes on the Scoutmaster, and you know, he monologues as villains are apt to do, and she screws him over because she broadcasts what happened to Dr. Hancock to everybody, so everybody at that point knows that the original Scoutmaster Hancock was betrayed by the Scouts, which kind of ruins, you know, what the Scoutmaster wanted to do. He blames Kit for his son being gay, because of course his son didn't know that Kit was a woman. And in the end, he gets killed by his son because he was a massive douche.
Yeah.
And in the end, the Highwaymen and the Scouts decide to come together to build a new society. So it pretty much ended exactly how you knew it was going to end. But, I enjoyed the series throughout. This is a world I'd kind of like to see more of. I wouldn't mind at all if they did a second season of this, or series, volume, whatever they wanted to call it.
There's been giant ants in this.
Yeah, that's how I was. Yeah, that's why I said that. I was like, we've seen giant ants in a couple other books lately. And I think there's a third one that did it too, and I don't remember what it is.
Okay.
Maniac in New York, number 4. You not reading any, Brandon?
No.
Okay. So, it starts off in the past, kind of Harry's first massacre. The woman who's in charge of the Maniac Task Force was a camp counselor. Her boyfriend kind of throws her in a room and, you know, locks the door. He gets killed. It all happens off panel, though, which is a little bit disappointing, because she makes the comment she's seen him before, and it's kind of like the Star Wars thing where when they go back and do the prequel, it's not exactly how they say it happened, because there was no confrontation. She didn't do anything like that. She was kind of thrown in a room and you know, had the door locked, so Harry didn't know she was there. She does exploit his weakness, which is fire, and you know, as he's burning, he's like, Harry! So I guess that's where they got Maniac Harry from. Mm. But he escapes, which, you know, puts her on the shit list. So, it only has one issue left. I don't know how they're gonna wrap this up or where this is headed, because it doesn't... It doesn't feel like in one issue they can cleanly end this. However, it's essentially Friday the 13th. They never really end. Mm-hmm. They can bring him back 3 months from now, and it'll be what it is. There's the vagrant.
Oh, we still got probably another 15 minutes until he gets into the store.
That's true, yeah. And the last one I'll mention, and I hope you guys can help me with this, was Rorschach number 8.
Oh, this was a good issue.
I got lost in this.
Okay.
I know it was a lot of him interrogating people.
So, this was my interpretation. So, in the issue, he's interrogating 3 people who were on the ranch that...
with the kid.
With the kid and what's the writer's name?
Fake Rorschach.
Yeah, the fake Rorschach. That guy. So he's interviewing these people, and whenever they're talking about the past, they are 3 colors, green, red, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
So they're each telling their stories, and their stories kind of, like, they all match up. But they match up, like, too closely. So they're telling the same story about, you know, how the room they stayed in, and the tower that they built that overlooked this stage, and, you know, the kid took them up there to shoot at this pumpkin, but they couldn't hit it. It was an impossible shot with this underpowered rifle. But then if you look closely at the art, especially on that pumpkin one, it's very clear that it's the exact same, like, pumpkin or gourd, whatever it was, mm-hmm. and each time. So, to me, that was, like, done intentionally, not just, like, an artist saving time. So, it made me think, oh, they're giving him a false story. They're saying they weren't all there, but they actually were. They coordinated it, you know, and he knows it. The Columbo character knows it. So he's like, which was a little weird because he's like beating them. Like at one point he gets up when he knows they lied and just walks over and punches them all in the face.
And that's what I don't get. Like, he's a reporter. He's not a cop.
Well, yeah. And that's what I think is happening, because on it's like third to last or maybe second to last page, they all say, "We've been waiting for you."
Yeah.
So the way I took that
or
was,
"You're here."
Yeah, something like that. The way I took that was, is they're gonna turn him into Rorschach. So I think that's where this is going. I think they were all in cahoots to somehow turn this guy into Rorschach if their plan failed, or maybe failing was part of their plan. So, you know, I think it goes
start
to
him on his path.
Yeah, it's this idea that, you know, the Rorschach identity can be passed along to anyone, and it doesn't belong to any one person. And I completely left out the part with them doing the demasking of Frank Miller.
Yeah,
which was a great page, but no, I really dug that, and I think that's where it's going. I think the Columbo character is going to be.
We'll go with that because I was a little lost. So yeah. We can go with that.
But it was a slow issue until like
three quarters of the way through.
Yeah,
yeah. So. There's a lot of text in it.
Mm-hmm.
So. Brandon,
all right. Let's see. So on your on the serial killer or slasher bent, Silver Corn number 2. Anybody read that?
Yes,
I read that.
Oh, I read Silver City. Sorry.
Oh, so
there's silver involved.
There was.
Yeah, so Silver Coin. This one's by Kelly Thompson. So this is that like it's almost like Twilight Zone. It's an anthology. And this one, it opens up with this little girl who's watching, like, a slasher movie where, you know, the Jason-type character is killing people at a camp. And the mom comes in and says, "Honey, why are you watching this movie? Like, it's going to scare you. You're going to camp tomorrow." And she's like, "Well, you know, maybe it'll give me, you know, if an axe murderer does come to camp, I'll know how to survive because I watched this movie the day before or whatever." So anyway, she goes to camp. She goes to sleepaway camp. And like when she gets there, she's in a bunk with like girls who they look like they're older. And they're like, "What are you doing in this bunk? This space was reserved." And then the counselor says, "No, the girl that you were thinking was going to be here, she got her dad canceled last minute." And so they're bullying her, playing a bunch of different pranks on her, just being mean. And at one point, at night, they cut her hair off. So she goes running out into the forest, and she stumbles upon this creepy house. And she walks in and is like, "Oh, I think I'm lost." And there's some mysterious like figure in there, and we see this altar that's kind of on the cover, like that's made of bones and candles and stuff, and she finds the silver coin. And then cut to the girls back at camp, and one by one they just start getting like murdered with a machete. And
yeah, that stuff's really
brutal. Yeah, it really like rated R type stuff, really. They had it coming. But so yeah, all the girls get murdered, and it's we see the character finally, and it's this like, it's clearly the little girl, but she has like it looks almost like a face, like a some she's torn off somebody's face and like she's wearing it. It's a very creepy mask.
Yeah, it was really creepy.
Yeah, so she kills them all, and she realizes like, oh, what did I do? And she drops the coin, and the coin like rolls out into the lake, and the coin turned her into a serial killer. Yeah, really, really fun book. This I honestly like I liked the last issue, but this one was funner than the longest one. Yeah, more fun.
And it didn't have it didn't have any connection to the first.
Other than the coin.
Other than the coin. It. There's no threat.
Well, you're leaving too?
I told you, I'm gonna pick my kid up.
Bye, Pat.
See you later.
So the other book I read that I'll mention was because you were talking about Doctor Doom and part of the Fantastic Four. So I picked up I haven't been reading it, but Guardians of the Galaxy number 14. So this has been kind of advertised as sort of a like a soft launch relaunch, I think. So it's like the same writer, but it's a new story arc. This issue was a lot of fun. So it starts off Dr. Doom has confronted the Guardians of the Galaxy in space, and he mind swaps with Hulkling to in order to use the what's it called, the Sword of Space, whatever Hulkling's sword is called. So he switches his mind with the Hulkling, or with Hulkling, and so now he can wield the Sword of Space that only like the king of the Kree Empire or whatever can wield. And Hulkling is in Doom's body, but Doom's body has like something there where like it can suppress Hulkling's mind, so Hulkling basically becomes a Doombot. So Doom starts fighting the Guardians, and at some point, this didn't really make a lot of sense, but Moondragon convinces him that, oh, you're only beating us because you have this sword, because you... Oh, he stabs Billy Kaplan, Hulkling's...
Wiccan.
Yeah, Wiccan. He stabs him to... which takes away his magic abilities, so he can't use those against Doom. So they're battling. Moondragon, like, convinces him that the only reason he's winning is because he has Hulkling's body, and he's using all of Hulkling's ability. Like, he's doing the stretchy arms, and he's flying around and stuff. And he's like, no, I'm not. And he goes to, like, switch places, like, switch his mind out back with Hulkling. And Moondragon, she, like, intercepts it. And she takes Doom and puts him in Rocket Raccoon's body, like his consciousness in Rocket Raccoon's body, which leads to a really funny panel of Doom in Rocket's body going, "What is this indignity?" Which is like a really it was a really funny panel.
No, does Rocket go to Doom's body? Because that could be dangerous. Like,
yeah, I think Rocket is in Doom's body and Hulkling's back in his own body. So it's like she kind of like, you know.
So maybe it was Rocket who proposed.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I can't remember exactly what Doom's goal was ultimately.
Get switched to Rocket Raccoon, probably.
But he's stuck in Rocket Raccoon's body, so Peter Quill makes him agree to help them. So Dr. Doom in Rocket's body has joined the Guardians of the Galaxy now. So it's pretty pretty fun scenario for the Guardians. So I'm gonna keep reading this. I had read the first couple issues, but I think I dropped it when it was either at Empire or after Empire or something like that. So, but it's good to read the Guardians again. Spencer?
I'll go on a bit of a Spider-Man run here. I read the Heroes Reborn Peter Parker Shutterbug one-shot. This is kind of basically like a retelling of, like, you know, what Peter Parker is in this universe. And, still same, getting picked on by Flash Thompson and, you know, all the bullies at school. Except that when he's at, like, the museum or, like, the science exhibit thing where he gets bit by the radioactive spider, like, right before he gets bit, Flash, like, pushes him on the ground and, you know, is just, you know, being a bully to him so the spider doesn't land on him and bite him, and then the spider ends up eventually getting, you know, gets, like, stepped on and killed. No Uncle Ben dies or anything like that. He graduates school, he goes to college, and he, like, invents, like, these, really advanced, like, drones that can take, like, you know, good pictures and video and stuff like that. And he's, like, testing them out on campus, and he accidentally runs one of them to, like, this, girl with pink hair, I forget her name, but I saw somewhere that she must have been, like, a villain, you know, in the actual, like, timeline. She's, like, a villain or something like that, I guess. So they kind of start talking, but then, while they're talking, they hear that, Hyperion is, like, fighting, somebody in the city, so they try to take, he tries to use one of his drones to, like, just so they can try to see what's going on. And, before that, they were having, like, him and Ben and May were gonna, like, get together for, like, a dinner in the city or something like that, and she was at, I forget the name of the store, but she was shopping at this, like, store to get, like a new dress or something like that. And in the fight, Hyperion, like, caused, like, an accident at the shop that she was at, and May ends up dying instead of Uncle Ben. Mm-hmm. And then, so he quits college to go and try to help Uncle Ben, you know, with just, trying to get a job, try to help, you know, keep him afloat. So that's how he gets a job at the Bugle. And he uses the drones that he made to take pictures of all the Hero Reborn heroes and stuff like that. And then there was, like, these annihilation bugs or something that Hyperion tried to get rid of, but he didn't get rid of all of them. So they got into his office, and Peter was trying to use science to save everybody, but he accidentally gets, like, bit or stung by one of them, and he starts to change into this creature. So to try to save anybody else who hasn't already left the building, he goes and, like, jumps out the window so he can, like, you know, fall and, you know, prior to his death. It ends with him falling. It was okay. I'm not getting any other of the Hero Reborn stuff. I just like the writer was Mark Bernard, and he's one of the guys that's been on, like, he does one of, like, Kevin Smith's podcasts with him and stuff like that. So I kind of like him. So I figured I'd check out something that he was writing. But it was okay.
Yeah, Peter had some scenes in Heroes in the second issue.
Okay.
Of Heroes Reborn, he considers himself, like, Hyperion's pal.
Jimmy Olsen. But, like, a reluctant Jimmy Olsen. Like, he's not really fond of him, right, you know, right. But...
He calls for his help in that second issue.
And then the giant-sized Amazing Spider-Man King Ransom. This is the end of that storyline. And so, I forgot to mention at the end that Peter got the guys from his New Avengers team to try to help find Boomerang. because he was taken. So this pretty much picks up after that. And you know, at first nobody wants to help Spider-Man because everybody hates boomerangs, so nobody wants to help. But you know, they eventually end up helping. And then Jonah is able. He does like to Telus to try to help. He has like another spider slayer thing, but it's to help. But it's being controlled by like the people that are watching it. So you know, eventually they start causing more harm than good and start like fighting each other and stuff like that. But don't know that Spider-Man is able to sneak away down into like the sewers where Frank is being kept to try to find him and stuff. And he does. And the last tablet that they need for the life tablet, or the last piece of the life tablet, is like stuck up in one of the walls. Spider-Man goes to try to get it. But then, like, this ghost spirit thing comes out and says only that, you know, true hero is able to come and you know, be able to get the tablet. So Boomerang's like, oh, well, I'll go get it. And Spider-Man webs him up and was like, well, hold on, you know, you've been doing better, but, you know, like, an actual hero might be too far. And then it shows, like, the doubt that Peter's had. So he's been in, like, this new costume, and Jonah's in his ear talking about, like, oh, you know, this is going to be great. The ratings are going to be off the charts and stuff. So he turns off the new suit and just goes back to, like, his regular suit. And he takes it. He goes to grab it, and he's able to take it with nothing happening to him. And, like, that's whenever the different people from, like, Boomerang's superior foe, like, Speed Demon and Shocker and like Hydra Man show up, and they start fighting him. And it turns out that Fred has kind of been playing the long game, because he knew at the end he was going to need a hero to get the last piece of the tablet. And then so he's getting kind of playing Peter and Spider-Man this whole time, because he knew if he could get Peter to trust him, that he could eventually get Spider-Man to trust him, because, you know, they were friends, you know, they're friends. But as you can see that Fred, by, you know, Fred's not exactly, like, he doesn't feel good about, turning on, you know, Peter and Spider-Man. So I'm sure there's gonna be more of that coming down the line. But everybody thought that, the Kingpin wanted to do this to bring Vanessa back, but instead he decides to do something that she would have wanted him to do, and brought back their son, the Rose. So now he's back. And then what's the Spider-Man Spider Shadow? We just get to see more of Peter turning now, with the suit having more of an effect on him. He's now, like, kind of openly killing villains. Like, he shows up to the Daily Bugle and smashes Jonah's hand, you know, and tells him, like, hey, if you say anything else about me, I'll be back for your other hand. And then the Kingpin sets some guys to go after him, because he's, you know, his theory is, like, I can take, you know, like, a 5 or 10% hit of Spider-Man just, you know, getting into my business and doing that, but an unchecked Spider-Man killing people, he's like, that's, you know, bad. That's bad for business, because eventually he'll come after him. So he sends the Shocker and Scorpion after him, and then after their fight, Spider-Man shows up at his penthouse with Shocker's bloody arm and Scorpion's bloody tail, and like just kind of throws him on the floor, and then ends up killing him too. And then it cuts to Doc Ock with a couple other villains, you know, trying to come up with a plan, like a Sinister Six, to actually take out Spider-Man properly. And he also has Doc Ock has some of his goons there. And, you know, and he tells them to leave, that, you know, to fetch the stuff that they need. And they all go to leave except one. And then that person ends up stabbing Doc Ock in the back, and it turns out that it's Eddie Brock, and he's doing that because if anybody's going to kill Spider-Man, it's going to be him. But I think this is the first time seeing Eddie Brock in this series, so I'm interested to see what his like story is without the Venom symbiote on it. Batman Urban Legends, that being a bigger book, most of the stories on it are pretty good, like the Red Hood and the Outsider stories were good. The Drifter one was okay. There was a solo, just standalone Lady Shiva story, which was kind of good, but that was alright. And then the last one I'll talk about is the Justice League Last Ride. Nobody
read it? Yeah, it's in the pile.
So this is kind of...
This is Zdarsky.
Yeah, it's set in the future a little bit. None of the Justice League members are really talking to each other. There's not really a Justice League. But something happens that causes them to meet up back up together at the Watchtower. And it's the Green Lanterns have caught Lobo, who is apparently... the constant of planets or whatever it is wants Lobo because Lobo has murdered like all the new gods, so he needs to stand trial, but the Green Lanterns are trying to keep him safe until his trial so he can reach justice like they're supposed to. And it's kind of cool how he shows up in kind of like an almost like a Kingdom Come kind of outfit, like, you know, not as much, but like a knight's kind of like armory kind of thing with his ring. So what their plan is they want to eventually move the new Green Lantern, Oa, to the moon on Earth and have it be like the protector of Earth along with the other heroes and stuff like that to kind of replace this Justice League. And Batman's not for that at first. And it shows also like Batman or Superman, who he's kind of you can see like the constant trying to save everybody and everything is starting to get to him. But yeah, it's just another really good series. It seems like something happened to John Martian Manhunter that separated them, so I'm interested forward to see, you know, see where it goes. So, but that was it.
That's it. Okay, you guys talk about Heroes Reborn.
Yes. Did.
Okay. No, that's fine. Just that's the one I read. Sorry, Colin McBain, owner of Pittsburgh Comics, who had to run an errand and got here much later than I expected. So I just read two more. Silver City is a new one from Aftershock. And basically, there's a big accident right at the beginning at an airport, and a whole bunch of people are killed. And they all end up in heaven, and not understanding what's going on, not remembering anything. And first, the people come through checking to make sure everybody's dead. And then they say, you know, go to the dormitories, and we'll give you orientation tomorrow. So the main character, this girl, Rue, who had met this little girl there, and they were both confused, and then they got separated. She saw a friend who had also just died, but he must have died elsewhere because he was ushered off into a different group. So she's headed to the dormitories, and these two guys on the street start talking to her, and she starts talking with them, and she kind of goes off with them. And they're kind of giving her the lowdown that this is a real, yes, you're dead. Your body isn't really your body. It's just like a facsimile of your body, and it's not impervious to anything, so if it gets wounded or injured, it won't heal. So there's lots of people that have like different color skin that they've sewn on to repair damage and things like that. And basically they go around, they go to a bar, get into a fight, all sorts of fun stuff. And then as she's arriving for orientation, two people are accosting the little girl, so she goes up to him and to get her, and she's like having flashbacks to her childhood of being accosted, and then she does something. You can't tell if she just like physically shoves them or if she uses like powers or something happens, and then she passes out, and it's to be continued. So we don't know exactly what happened there. And then the other one I read is, I think it's Time After Time by Deck.
We talked about that one.
Oh, you talked about that one. Okay. Yeah, well, that's all I read then. Fine. Yeah. Whatever. Or Time Before Time. But I thought that was real good.
Yeah.
Even without the big twist at the end, I thought it was a really good story. Yeah. So,
Colin, there were two questions that were directed at you.
Yes, I was going to get to those. Yeah. Yeah.
I can read them if
you
don't have it up. So we talked about WarnerMedia and Discovery merger.
Yeah.
The second question here. The PRH and its Next 60 and free shipping versus Diamond with the same discount levels offered by PRH, but no free shipping and no Net 60, pros and cons.
Well, Next 60 doesn't really matter because, like, I'm Net 21 with Diamond. So it sounds great at the beginning, but then once...
What is Net
60? You don't have to pay for 60 days.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You owe the same amount day one as you do day 60. After that, like, interest and things charged. But you have 60 days to pay the bill. The problem is once you get past that, so I'm just paying 60 days ago bill, and you're just in a routine. You owe something every week. It's just from 60 days ago. So that's not a huge deal. It's nice at the beginning, and if you're just placing a few orders with them, it's great. Like, if you play it once a month, but if you're doing weekly orders... It eventually ends up you're just sending them a check every week, so that's not a big deal. The free shipping I don't think is going to be a real big deal, because I was talking to somebody. I have 74 pounds, two boxes coming from Lunar for DC next week, and it's $22 is what they're charging me. So that'll presumably be what I'm paying for Marvel. So saving $20 isn't a big deal, but on the flip side, based on next week's invoice, I'd be losing $160 based on what I'm losing
from the
loss of discount. Now, sadly, Marvel just released their discount terms, and it's even worse. Well, it's about the same, but then plus paying shipping. And shipping theirs is a flat 2.5% of retail now. So basically, instead of being 50%...
That seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot. Yes, it does. In one way it is, in another way it's not, but I'll explain. Okay. But so basically their discount now is 47.5 versus 50, which stinks when I was 57. So it's like I'm taking a hit either way. So I'm not happy about it in any way, shape, or form. It's going to cost me a lot more. Basically, each Marvel comic is going to cost me 28 cents more than it did. And that adds up quickly. Especially every trade is now... 7 cents per dollar, and a $16 trade is whatever, 16 times seven. So it's going to add up. So I really have no choice but to really cut back on my Marvel. Because I worked it out, it was going to be over $10,000 based on 2019's orders is how much more they're going to cost me. And you know what? I didn't make an that's not money I have just laying around to send to Marvel. So we're probably going to be going subs only on Marvel. As soon as this starts in October, I won't carry any for the shelf. It's going to hurt them also on, like, the variant covers. When they do 10 variant covers, and I used to order one or two each, whatever looked good. Not anymore. I can't afford to have a single extra copy of Marvel now because they're costing more. And then the problem with Diamond is, with losing Marvel, are they going to be sustainable?
Yeah.
And then if they go, that kills every small publisher. So if you're like an AWA, you're liking Ahoy, we're not going to have them. Because I'll have to order them direct from them and order four copies and have to pay $6 shipping on those four books.
Yeah.
And that's not going to fly. That doesn't make sense.
Going to PRH is not possible.
It might be. I don't know. But remember, PRH has never shipped a single comic yet. Yeah. I've seen Diamond's warehouse that was over 1 million square feet. I don't see PRH being able to set that up in the next 2 months. Yeah. So... that it was a long process for Diamond to get where they are, so I don't see PRH just suddenly replicating it. Also, a little concerned, I got my first big Penguin Random House order in, $900 worth of product, $500 in damages.
Oh, wow.
So over half the shipment was damaged.
And that's mostly trades?
That was all trades.
Yeah.
So where are we? I can't deal with, and I have no replacements yet, and I have no credits yet. It's been 2 weeks. So... they're not exactly filling me with confidence that they're going to be able to ship me comics and have, so I'm going to say pretty much be ready that no Marvel comics will arrive in sellable condition. So that's how it's going to be. So what's the yeah? So it's sounding great. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Well. All right. Next question, from Mr. Ludwig. As an owner and proprietor, which were your favorite collections that came through the door? For others, which were your favorite collections you bought?
It's hard to say. I had a real nice one come in a while back. Just a ton of early Spider-Man, X-Men, Avengers. Low grade, but affordable.
So and, like 60s?
Or? Yeah, 60 stuff. Like, you know, Spider-Man. It was like, I know it was like Avengers 8. It wasn't 4, but it was like 5, 7, 8. Early, you know, single digit stuff. But in really low grade, so they sold like at 50, 60 bucks, so they just flew out of here because they were affordable. Silver Surfer number one. Mm-hmm. It was just a real nice, really nice collection for that. One of my favorites I'm still working on, it was a ton of stuff from the 70s. It's actually still in my living room, and I need to bring it back. But a lot of stuff I remember buying, and it's fun seeing those. Because that's a lot of stuff I bought off the shelf new. And it was just neat seeing that stuff. I've had it for a couple of years now. And I want to do a lot of blog posts based on it. And I just need to find time. Yeah. Because I realized that my knowledge and my collecting started about 10 years before all you guys. So I see books that are really meaningful to me that you guys have no idea why. My favorite being DC Comics Presents number 26. Which is an awesome book, and I remember when it came in and people looked at it, I showed it to the guys, and they were like, I don't get it. It's Superman and Green Lantern, who cares? It's like, no, that had the 16-page New Teen Titans insert, which introduced the New Teen Titans, and that was why that was so cool, but they had no idea. So it's just, I have a little different frame of reference, so I wanted to do stuff on those. And it's just time. It's like, yeah. Oh, I could sit and research that book, or I could, you know, read, or I could watch TV, or I could sleep. So yeah. We'll get there. So those are the fun ones. It's, you know, the big collections of the 90s stuff, not so much fun. And it's not even that it needs to be big books. It's just, yeah, books that, you know, I remember, I have a good feeling about. You know, ones were, because I was doing, I had a subscription to most Marvel books in junior high. And I still remember most of the covers. So when they come in, it's like a good feeling. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember getting this out of the mailbox, you know, in eighth grade. And I was so excited. So those are the good ones. Some less fun ones. I remember I had this big, like 30 box collection come in. Didn't pay a lot for it. They were just trying to get rid of it. But everything was, it was 2 books per bag. And just to even get it, even though it was in order, I had to unbag, take one out, reclose it, bag that one, close it, and it was like just a huge process. Just the amount of work involved to get it ready was just tedious. Another good one I had, it was a guy brought in, it was one of those big purple totes. There had been a fire. Now, the books weren't damaged, but there was soot, they were really dirty, and the tape had melted. So in order to get it, so basically I was able to go through it enough to get an idea of what it was. It was mostly 90s stuff, nothing exciting. I made him an offer. I remember he took it home, and then his wife, he put it in the front foyer, and his wife said, why is that here? He's like, well, he didn't offer me what I wanted, and she just stared at him. And he picked it up, put it back in the car, and was back like in an hour, so that was kind of funny. But so basically I had to take him out, and it was one Saturday when Adam was here. It was doing a red chair. We were just sitting talking and recording. And basically I had a dirty hand and a clean hand, and I had them face down on the table, and I'd peel it open, slide the book out with my clean hand, and then peel the thing off. So I'd like that. And so I'm doing all that. And then as I turned them over, there were some signed by Stan Lee, all stuff that I couldn't tell because they were literally stuck together because of the tape. So that was a nice, that one was really nice, a find. Some were signed by Claremont, but that was a real nice collection. Turned out that, you know, I didn't pay a lot, but I wasn't trying to scam him, just.
Yeah, and he could have pointed out.
Right, well, he probably didn't even know or remember, yeah. But yeah, I mean, they were literally stuck together because the tape had melted. So that was fun. And you never know, every once in a while you get stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, the surprise collection, the guy just, like the guy brought in some books in, Goodwill boxes that he must have picked up at a Goodwill, like, and just bought everything they had and then brought it here to sell to try to make some money. And it was great, and it was crap, and there was nothing in there of any that was any good, except this one Sin City hardcover. I'm like, okay, I'll buy it because I want that. You know, that's cool. I've never seen this before. So I buy it, and he's happy to get his money, and then I open it up and pull it out, and oh, there's signed and numbered Frank Miller. It's like, oh, nice, that's going home. So that worked out. So yeah, I mean, buying is fun. It's a little bit frustrating too. I had a guy come in with this really nice collection, ton of Green Lantern, like from Showcase 4 up, missing a couple of the keys, like it was missing first Sinestro, missing first Star Sapphire, but a ton of them and some other stuff. And came through, and went through all, made an offer. And he's like, you know, I don't know if I want to get rid of those Green Lanterns, and pulled all the Green Lanterns out. And I'm like, well, taking those out, there's nothing here. My offer went from like $500 down to $70, you know, based on what was left. So that sucked. Mm-hmm. Just time and effort put into, I got the chaff. And he probably took those somewhere else and sold them. Thanks. So, yeah, but I mean, that's a fun part of the job. That's one nice thing about with all the SBA money and stuff is there's money in the bank. So when people come in with a good collection, where normally it was like, oh God, I really want this, but I know there's $300 in the bank and I just, you know, I can't buy this. Now I can. So, which is really nice. It's a nice change of pace.
You ever bought a collection?
Not at one time. I know there's been like, Anthony Gaiman Dungeon, I knew like there was a, the Mike Grail one run, he had like all the issues, so he just like put them in the box and put them in the back of the store and would let me get some buy some issues every couple weeks and stuff like that. So I would do things like that. I'd buy like long runs of stuff slowly, but I've never bought like a whole collection
I've never bought a collection from anybody. I bought stuff on eBay, but
yeah,
like, I know what I'm getting when I do that.
Yeah, a few years ago at a convention, I found the entire run of Camelot 3000.
Ooh, nice. Cheap. I remember getting that when it came out.
Cheap. I missed that when I was a kid. I didn't get it, so I was happy to...
That's one of the ones the guys, a lot of got people... Not, what? Camelot what?
Yeah.
And it's like, Mike Barr, Brian Boland art? Come on.
Yeah.
King, the aliens are invading, so King Arthur's resurrected to save Britain. And things don't quite go right.
Yeah.
Gawain is into a giant mutated monster, and Lancelot is in a lady.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was happy to get that.
Yeah, that was a good one. Oh, and Brian Bolinard. Oh, my God. Yeah. That was beautiful. And that was on Baxter paper with the great colors. Oh, that was a great series. But stuff like that. That's the stuff I wanted to blog about in my free time. You know, so.
All right. Well, what's coming out this week?
Oh, good job. Look at you. Okay. We have Alien number 3. That's been selling quite well. Beta Ray Bill number 3. Black Panther, the last issue of this series. They just announced a new series by, I forget who's writing it.
John Ridley.
John, there you go.
Yeah. Is he still in space?
No, hopefully he's back. But issue 25 is next week. But like, here's an example. So I didn't even order all the covers, but I have 10 different variants and plus the main. And they're $6 books. So at the higher price point, it's like,
When is Ta-Nehisi Coates getting off of Captain America? Because I thought he was done at like 27.
Yeah, and he keeps going.
And 29 came out. I'm like, oh, I guess he's not.
So, Blue Flame, number 1. This is a new one from Vault. That one's supposed to be really good. Department of Truth, number 9. Haha, number 5. Heroes Reborn, 4. Shocking. But here's what I don't get. We got Heroes Reborn 3 this week and nothing else. Next week, we get Heroes Reborn and Heroes Reborn Magneto and the Mutant Force, Heroes Reborn Siege Society, and Heroes Reborn Young Squadron. Spread them out, boys. Made in Korea. This is a new one from Image about like artificial intelligence and things like that and growing up with that. New previews next week. So previews orders probably due next week. Reptil, number 1, the everybody's favorite young Avenger mutant kid. Shadecraft number 3. Oh, I highlighted that because we're getting Shadecraft, Shadow Doctor, Shadow Service, and Shadow Man. So, if you're looking for some shade, we got it for you.
Yeah.
And then tying in with War of the Bounty Hunters, we have Darth Vader 12 and Dr. Aphra 10. Also have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin number 3. Finally.
Oh, wow. Coming
out. Yeah. And then from DC, we have... Batman Black and White number 6, that's the last issue of that. Batmite, Fortnite 0.2 second prints. So I will finally have some on the shelf. Yay! Waiting for first prints next week, week after. Detective 1036, Milestone Returns Infinite Edition. Mr. Miracle, The Source of Freedom. That's a new 6-issue miniseries about Shiloh Norman, not Scott Free. Robin number 2, so we can see what happens when he got his heart ripped out. Stargirl Spring Break Special by Jeff Johns. And Strange Adventures number 10. So, good week of books coming. Good weeks of books this week.
Yeah.
We're doing Ed Brubaker for the month.
If you have anything left.
Yeah, I've been pretty decimated, but I did order a bunch.
I restocked the shelf there.
Okay.
Somebody bought like 3 or 4 okay. things today.
Cool. So. That's awesome. Because normally nobody even pays attention to it. So it's great that last one sold a ton. Was it AWA? That sold a bunch.
Yeah.
And this one's been moving. I just reordered a ton of Brubaker stuff.
Yeah, I put his Daredevil run. What's it called?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That it's like a not an omnibus, but it's
Ultimate
it's
Collection,
like the full thing.
I okay. Think. Yeah.
Is that an omnibus?
Yeah, if it was a hardcover.
It was on this shelf.
Yeah, so yeah. It's been getting decimated. That's cool.
He has so much good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we picked a good one.
Yeah. And you're I think you're pretty much out of number ones. So like I put like a fatal number one up there.
Okay.
Fatal. Yeah. But
Like, I got you. I might have more in the basement. I'll check tomorrow.
You have a lot of twos, threes, and later on,
that
especially
happens.
Like criminal and stuff. So. Yeah.
Probably have criminal downstairs. So yeah, and the previews is most likely. Hopefully, it's due not next week. Due next week and not this week. I will definitely post if it's due this week. That would not be good. I'm not ready. God, I got you. I'll check that when we're done. That's about it. It was funny. I was talking to somebody about book club, and they're like, "When did you last do book club?" I'm like, "Last February." Yeah, it's been a while. So soon, hopefully by the end of summer, fall, we'll get back in the swing of that. I think that's about it. As always, website's pittsburghcomics.com. Facebook is Pittsburgh Comics. Twitter and Instagram are PGH Comics. Hopefully, I get to go home and sign some papers tonight. Woo! Let's see. Spencer.
That's the podcast.
We will talk at you later. See ya.